Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Pella Window and Door of Georgia, viewed to be the best.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So the one thing we're not going to do today, and I'm going to be very, very careful to make sure this doesn't happen, we're not going to overreact. Because frankly, I don't really think we really have much of a reason to overreact. I mean, the truth is, this is not a, you know, I guess toot my own horn or see I told you so moment, but everything that we had said in the days leading up to this game, I think if you went back and replayed it, broadcast it out once again, I don't think we would have to apologize for anything that we said leading up to the start of this game. People who had seen Georgia practices, had seen the scrimmage, told us, ooh, this offense, a little bit of a work in progress right here. We had warned with all the excitement that was building around Dwan Mathis, and obviously that's a name that will come up a lot this week. We had said, be careful that you don't put too much on him. Be careful that you don't expect too much from him, because if it doesn't work out that way, and just given the buzz and the chatter that it exists around the Georgia offense, there was a chance that was going to be true. We knew around here that those high expectations could quickly turn into huge disappointment. Frankly, the conversation kind of gets kind of ugly. The problem, though, is sometimes, and you all know this to be true, we've been doing this show, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia for 5 years. Going into a game, no one wants to hear any of that. Everybody wants to hear who's going to be balling out. That's all people want to hear. And then when that doesn't occur, there has a tendency to be a little bit of a very sharp turn of the conversation where folks start looking to blame people for why things went wrong. You know, there was no need to overpraise before the game. There's no need to overreact after the game. The truth is, Georgia played a very ugly brand of football, especially in the first half on Saturday against Arkansas, found a way to come away with the win. We will get into all of the concerns that emerge from that, but can we at least be positive off the top here for a couple of minutes? I thought there were a handful of things on Saturday for Georgia that need to get some attention as part of the solution for the Dogs the rest of the way. We'll talk quarterbacks. We'll do all of that. Let me just rattle off a few positives here for a moment. First of all, Scott Cochran as special teams coach. Could his debut have gone much better? There's a blocked punt that's a huge part of this game. Big return yards for guys like Kenny McIntosh. Thought Kyaris Jackson looked good as a punt returner. You got all kinds of speed and athleticism chasing down kicks on the Arkansas side of things. I thought that Jack Podlesny had a nice field goal for Georgia at the end of the first half. Those were points that mattered there near the end of the half there. Looks like he had a pretty good debut all the way around. Jake Camarda punting the ball was incredible. Overall, it's a terrific special teams debut for Scott Cochran. I think you got to give him credit for that. There's obviously the defensive breakdown on the first Arkansas touchdown, or the Arkansas touchdown. Other than that, this defense very much as advertised. Huge play from the secondary. Pick six, first career interception for Eric Stokes. Richard LeCount's kind of all over the field. After that, couple of picks for him, the defense as advertised there. So I think you feel pretty good about those two things. Then you get to the Georgia offense, which admittedly there's a lot to break down off this. That's, hey, you know, maybe some things that you're concerned about a little bit. But even in the midst of that, I would say there's a couple of bright spots that you kind of want to highlight, a couple of bright spots you kind of want to pay attention to here a little bit. Let me start with quarterback where Stetson Bennett comes in the game. You know, there's this thought of, well, you know, sort of a backhanded compliment, you know, of someone being kind of a game manager. Sometimes that's the kind of thing that gets sort of thrown around as kind of a backhanded compliment, as something that's really more of a negative than a positive. But I think that Georgia on Saturday showed you how valuable a game manager can be. I'm talking about someone who's really, truly capable of managing the game. We'll hear from Smart on Bennett coming up in just a moment. And part of managing the game is leaning on the offensive weapons that Georgia has at its disposal. This game changed on the George Pickens touchdown. And a lot of credit to that will go to Stetson Bennett, who kind of came in and gave Georgia a shot in the arm offensively. Bennett also gets the two-point conversion after that. But let's not forget what Pickens does to get in the end zone on that score. You know, it's his energy, that willingness to kind of want the ball in his hand with the game on the line. Georgia's lucky to have that. They go on to score, you know what, at least 21 unanswered after that. I guess you give them 24 unanswered as well after the next pod field goal after that. And for as much credit as you give for Stetson Bennett coming into the game and energizing Georgia in that way, I think you've also got to give Pickens credit for being the kind of guy that can step in, make that play in kind of a short space there, make a guy miss, find a way to get in the end zone. The game changed on that moment, and that's the kind of thing that Georgia has to lean on right now. I do think it's telling. that Pickens did step up for Georgia in that first game of the season in that way. Maybe a slight shift in the identity of this team in years past, last year in particular, when Georgia found itself in a tough spot. You were looking to DeAndre Swift make the play to get Georgia where it needed to go. A running back last year, now in the new Todd Monken offense, maybe it's a wide receiver who does some of that kind of stuff. And on Saturday, I thought Pickens really stepped up. That's a bright spot from the game. Let me also say this, then we're going to hear from Kirby Smart a little bit. I think they're also in the midst of what Dwan Mathis did on Saturday. There are also some bright spots there as well. This clearly was not a great game for Dwan. He played very much the way you might expect someone who's been away from the football field for a long time, who's never played an SEC snap before, finding himself on the road, even with fewer fans than normal. Dwan Mathis kind of found himself looking like a quarterback who was kind of in that spot. But even in the midst of all of that, and you can go listen to the full Kirby Smart press conference where Smart kind of offered some defenses of Mathis a little bit, but even in the midst of all of that, he still showed you big arm strength. He still showed you athleticism. Maybe it is true that after the one big hit that I know many of you think should probably have been targeting, and maybe it should have been, you know, maybe that rattled his cage just a little bit. But no one should be, and I don't think anyone in this audience will be, but no one should be tossing Dwan Mathis aside right now. Dwan Mathis did not have a great debut. He'd be the first to admit that. But even in the midst of all this, there were some bright spots for Mathis as well. The athleticism that he brings to the table, the skill set that he possesses, the kind of thing that can't be coached up. There'll be a role for Dwan Mathis here in the future. We'll kind of see how that goes. But on Saturday, it was true that Georgia was saved in many respects by Stetson Bennett stepping in and doing what needed to be done, manage the game, utilizing the talent that Georgia had at its disposal. And why was he able to do that? Well, Smart kind of chalked it up to one thing, as I said before, that Mathis doesn't have, Stetson Bennett does have, and Kirby Smart talked about that after the game. This is what Kirby said about Stetson.
Experience at that position is a premium. I think you see that more and more across the SEC as you look at the quarterbacks that are here and the quarterbacks that aren't here. Stetson has played in a lot of football games. Everybody forgets he went to Mississippi and played in the JUCO League where he played, I guess, 10 games or something and got to play a whole season. That value of playing that season is immense in terms of getting reps. Then he came here, he took every single rep for an entire year behind Jake Fromm as the two. So we knew, we felt comfortable with what we had in Stetson in terms of all his reps he had taken.
Now, the one thing that he may have gotten some reps in prior seasons, as Kirby Smart said, you know, going back to last year, practicing behind Jake Fromm or junior college. The one thing, though, that we were told was, and Smart himself has even confirmed this, that he wasn't necessarily getting a lot of practice reps, you know, during this preseason, at least in terms of running with the number one offense and number two offense. It seemed like he was almost exclusively running with the threes, at least when people got a chance to see this. The assumption was Georgia wanted to see what it had in the other guys. And when you think about how well Stetson played on Saturday in the absence of those practice reps, it's actually a pretty amazing performance. Smart also talked about that as well.
Stetson, unfortunately, did not get a ton of reps in minicamp leading up to the first practices. He has not gotten a ton of reps, but he prepares himself the right way without taking the reps. And he did a good job of showing that today when he went in and was able to execute the game plan.
Yeah, listen, I think there's a certain confidence that Stetson kind of has that allows him to do that even without getting the kind of preseason preparation that maybe the other Georgia quarterbacks got. It really does speak to how well Stetson was able to perform on Saturday. He deserves a ton of credit for that. But there's also this sense in which you should probably just sort of stop and appreciate kind of what Bennett's been through, kind of the ultimate underdog, you know, being a guy who was a walk-on, then kind of maybe seemingly losing his spot at Georgia, then coming back, getting a chance to be on scholarship, being praised for his work as scout team quarterback, now getting a chance to play on Saturday. You know, we talked a lot going into the week about the feel-good story of Dwan Mathis, and that's a legitimate feel-good story. But Bennett getting a chance to play after having a lot of people over the years simply probably telling him he wasn't good enough to do so, that's a pretty nice feel-good story, too. And it was nice to hear Kirby Smart on Saturday stop to appreciate that just for a moment.
I'm proud and happy for Stetson. I wouldn't take that moment away from him. No way. He did a great job, and he rallied the guys around him. And I think they saw his competitive spirit on some of those scrambles and the two-point play, and that's the juice we needed. He's a great competitor. I spent a whole year with him on the scout team the 1 year he was here, and you got to see the guy very composed, very, very good poise.
So Kirby Smart, I think, says it correctly that Stetson Bennett on Saturday provided the juice that Georgia needed. What happens this week against Auburn? Will it be Bennett again? Does Dwan Mathis get a chance to bounce back at home, maybe more comfortable in the second week? Who knows? Does JT Daniels get cleared to play? Is he ready to go against Auburn? Who knows on that? But the one thing that you know, I'll remind you, though, even on JT Daniels is, you know, maintain the proper level of expectation even for that. You know, this notion that, you know, Dwan Mathis is going to step up and be Georgia's savior, that's asking too much from him. You know, to say that Stetson Bennett's going to be able to repeat all this week after week after week, what he was able to do on Saturday against Arkansas, that might be asking too much from him. To say, well, the moment that JT Daniels is cleared, that's the hand-picked guy to run the Todd Monken offense. He's going to come in and be the offensive save. Frankly, I think that's overwrought a bit too. That's, I think, expecting too much. This Georgia offense, I said this every single day last week. I'll say it again. This Georgia offense is going to be a work in progress. They've got some offensive weapons. They're trying to figure out a quarterback. They are experiencing some growing pains in the first air part of the Todd Monken here, and you just sort of got to take the good with the bad, at least for right now on that. But on Saturday, it was at least enough to get a win over the Razorback. Now, let me quickly say this for a moment. I was there on Saturday. I was thrilled to be a part of the SEC opener here for Georgia in what is a very strange year. And boy, the atmosphere around Reynolds Razorback Stadium, very nice stadium. The folks in Arkansas were incredibly hospitable. But man, to be walking around and see really no one around the stadium just a few minutes before the game even, it was just so strange. And to be in the stadium, and you know, there were moments in which before the game began, even when they're kind of doing the calling of the hogs and the things that their fans are kind of known for doing, had I been sitting on one sideline, I could have talked to someone directly over the field in the other sideline, and I'm pretty sure they would have heard me. It was that quiet in there. You know, there were fans, they were stretched out, they were spaced out, but it was just a pretty surreal experience, not the intense game day atmosphere that you're used to. Then when the game begins, there's the artificial noise that kind of gets turned on, and look, there were some moments on third downs, Arkansas fans were kind of banging on bleachers and things like that. But the artificial noise part of this, I have to say, being in the stadium, ended up being a little weirder for me than I wanted to be. It sounds like it wasn't a huge problem for Georgia coach Kirby Smart and his team. Smart was asked about, you know, the feeling around the game, and I think Smart kind of wanted to deflect away from not using that as an excuse for why his team had played poorly with penalties and things like that. But Smart says the atmosphere was really no problem for that team whatsoever.
The atmosphere was great. The crowd noise made it seem like it was a normal game. You know, I think as a competitor and a football player and a coach, you don't, it's not, there's no concern for how many people are in the stands. I mean, once they pumped in the noise, it didn't feel any different. As a matter of fact, I thought it got pretty loud on some third downs between what fans they had and also the crowd noise they pumped in. So that had no outcome on our ability to execute. That had nothing to do with that. We just got to do a better job.
So Smart doesn't want to use the crowd noise or the anything like that as an excuse, but I'm telling you this right now. The artificial noise thing in the SEC right now is pretty weird. So a couple of the third downs, you could tell they turned the volume up way loud. Maybe at home you got the same sense. You could tell they turned it up way loud, and then when the play's over, it's like they don't turn it back down quick enough. It was just so obviously fake that it was a little bit, I guess, it just kind of shocked you a little bit. It's just not what you're used to seeing. Especially sometimes when you hear the artificial noise turn way up, you look around, you don't really see people cheering. Just the whole thing just seemed like a Milli Vanilli concert, you know, lip syncing. There wasn't really, you know, a whole lot of, you know, authenticity to it. The other thing is, I think in the NFL, they're supposed to only have 70 decibels worth of artificial noise. I don't know, the SEC has been quite as specific about what's allowed there. I could predict this being a problem before the season's done. Maybe someone in some stadium somewhere cranking that volume up, you know, louder than it's supposed to be. You know, not an issue for Georgia on Saturday because for the most part it was playing an overmatched opponent. But if they're not going to be super specific about how this artificial noise can be used, I could foresee this end up being a talking point a little bit later on. It was weird to be there. It was weird to watch that unfold. And as you think about bigger games later on this year, the role that the PA system, the speaker system in the stadium plays in creating the atmosphere, my guess is that ends up being a bigger talking point by the time the season is done. My name's Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us. No matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m. Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, radio, and Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, or as a podcast, wherever you find them, including the world-famous DogNation.com. It's good to have you with us. Big thanks to our friends at Pella Window and Door of Georgia for making it all possible. You know, Pella Window and Door can help equip your house with energy-efficient windows and doors. They also provide you great meeting opportunities right now. You want to meet face-to-face and talk about all the installation options and all the choices that you have available to you from Pella Window and Door of Georgia. They can do that for you. If you want the video teleconference, they can provide that contactless meeting experience for you there too. Great deal. Final days to take advantage of this. 10% off vinyl, 15% off fiberglass, 20% off wood windows and doors with no payments, no interest for 12 months. It's a great, great deal. Here's how you take advantage. Go to the website, PellaBranch.com. That's PellaBranch.com, or give them a call in their Dunwoody showroom at 404-445-2979. That number once again, 404-445-2979. Pella Window and Door of Georgia is viewed to be the best. Energy efficient windows and doors save you money when you go to look at your energy bills, improve the value when you talk about resale. All those things are a possibility with Pella Window and Door of Georgia, so make sure you check them out. I've got John Stinchcomb here coming up in just a couple of minutes. Before that, though, let's go around the doghouse here today, assisted by AAA. And so off the top of the show, I kind of tell you about some of the things that I thought were bright spots, even in an ugly game for UGA. Special teams, defense, the weapons on offense, the fact that Bennett steps in, doesn't, not asked to do too much, just simply find a way to deliver the football to the guys who can make something happen, like George Pickens on the touchdown. Even Dwan Mathis, in the midst of a shaky game for him, I thought he also showed you some things that make you feel good about, you know, what his future could be in a Georgia uniform. We're certainly not going to come down too hard on that young man here today. But in the other side of the coin, it's also appropriate to look at some of the things that Georgia needs to do better with. Some of the things in which maybe you were kind of, raised eyebrow of, ooh, I expected to be better than that. You know, I told you a lot last week that for me, this offense is still a work in progress. On Saturday, we saw an example of some of that. But there was a couple of examples. I'm going to cite one here in particular where I thought the offensive line for Georgia was not as good as it needs to be if Georgia's going to truly be a championship contender. This is an offensive line in transition from kind of bigger a year ago to maybe leaner and quicker here this season. But I thought there were some real, real shaky moments for this offensive line in a way that surprised me a little bit. Kirby Smart was asked about some of the rotation stuff. Warren Erickson going into a center. Trey Hill briefly shifting to guard. Smart was kind of asked about that. Mostly deflected off of that, but did acknowledge the offensive line for Georgia needs to play better. This is what Smart said.
We didn't really move a lot of guys around in the first half, to be honest with you. We didn't play but six guys, so there wasn't a lot going on there. Six guys playing. That was more of a rotation that we've always had, felt good about. With Warren, Trey, and Ben in there. I think we got to play better all together offensively is the biggest thing. We got to find some guys that are willing to fight for extra yards and knock people off the ball to help us. There were some young guys out there, and we'll review how they played, but I'm not ready to say played good or bad right now.
And in this year of Zoom press conferences, we're just going to have some weird audio, and we've all just kind of sort of got to get used to that. I apologize for the little bit of interference there and there on the Kirby stuff. That's just kind of the way we're living in this sort of Zoom world. So Smart acknowledging that Erickson and Hill do kind of share some time at center, but what doesn't come up there is the fact that also in the second half you have Warren McClendon that comes into play in place of Xavier Trust a bit there at right tackle. So you did have a little more shifting around with the offensive line that Kirby Smart acknowledged, and this is supposed to be one of this team's strengths, even with three new starters. And it is certainly troubling that when Trey Hill, who you think of, or at least you're supposed to think of as one of the bedrock guys of this Georgia offensive line, when you're having trouble with the center quarterback exchange, that is a little eye-opening. So, listen, I'm not going to sugarcoat and say, oh, everything is perfect for Georgia as they head towards Auburn on Saturday. That's already a big step in competition, a very tough game. But there were, some things to be okay with and some things to work on. All in all, it's kind of a little bit of both when you think about Georgia and Auburn, Georgia and Arkansas this past Saturday. Heading towards Auburn this week, clearly the offensive line, a part of that discussion. We're going to talk more with John Stinchcomb about that coming up in a moment. Before that, though, it is Around the Doghouse, assisted today by our friends at AAA. AAA can save you big money, both in terms of really a lot of things. And one of the ways they do that is with the AAA the Savings Hack Pack. It's a combination of AAA benefits worth more than $1,000, including free career assistance, identity theft protection, up to 85% off prescriptions, discount on food and essentials when you're on the road the way that I was this past weekend. The Hack Pack is a part of every annual AAA membership, and just like its legendary roadside assistance, it can help save big for you over the course of your lifetime there as a AAA member. So go to AAA.com/go savings to find out more about this. It's AAA.com/go savings, and you can find out how quickly a AAA membership can help pay for itself with you. All right, it's great to have you with us here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia. For more of the good and the bad of dogs in a week one win against Arkansas, let's talk to John Stinchcomb here as a part of a Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
We will get ready to say hello to John Stinchcomb here as a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. And, John, as I said a moment ago, you know, there's, to me, even in the midst of kind of a shaky game where maybe some Georgia fans were a little panicked, you know, heading towards the first half, I think there's still some bright spots for Georgia to take from the game, but also kind of admittedly there's some pretty big concerns that have to be wrestled with too. So since I started with the positive side off the top of the show, I'll start on more of the, I guess, concern side with you. I was just talking offensive line a moment ago. That group's got to play better, does it not?
It does. It does. And you have to see, recognize that there's a number of moving parts right now. You just replaced three draft picks, two of which went in the first round. So there's going to be some drop-off, and there's going to be growing pains. I think that's what we saw more than anything in the first half across the board. You replace that many pieces, and it's not going to happen seamlessly. There's going to be some adjustments that occur, and this is the first time for a lot of these guys that they see live bullets being fired. And this is probably the most important week of practice that Georgia is going to have, because you see what you put out on film, and you have to make adjustments now. You have to clean up all the mistakes that were made on Saturday before you face a worthy opponent in Auburn. So in preparation for that, how much can you adjust your game? What can you do with these 3 or 4 days of real practice to clean up the mistakes that were made and prepare for this SEC opponent that is in the hunt, whereas Arkansas very much is not in that same discussion. So there's a lot of work to do. I think up front, you recognize that you had a rotation of guys. Both the Warrens came in, Erickson and McClendon, in rotational series type, not relieving anybody. I think it's still a matter of competition up front for guys to see where they fit in and what five is best suited that you want to carry into each Saturday. So very much still a work in progress.
So let me ask you about this, and you're certainly way more qualified than I am to speak on this. But so there's a moment in the first half where, you know, obviously the Georgia offense is just not quite clicking. You know, Mathis is having trouble getting comfortable, and we'll talk more about him in a moment. And you just kind of need to try to establish the run because the passing game is standing on shaky ground. But it certainly seems like, to my eyes, that there's no free lunch in life, right? We all celebrated during the offseason, ooh, Matt Luke's going to favor lighter, slimmer, more athletic offensive linemen. But that means you're not 335 pounds at tackles anymore, so you can't just stand there and maul people and open up big holes when the, or at least it's more difficult to do that, when the passing game is failing. It certainly seems like Georgia is in the midst of making a trade for smaller, not quite, you know, so much maulers the offensive line, but in days in which the passing game is not quite clicking the way that it needs to, those smaller, thinner offensive linemen are going to find themselves in a more troubled spot because they can't just lean on their size the way they would have in the past. That's what it looks like to my eyes as someone who played the offensive tackle position in the NFL. How would you respond to that?
Well, I think size became a little bit of a crutch in the past, in that we forced our hand into some difficult situations and just felt like we could maul people and put them in a phone booth and beat them up. And we all grew frustrated with that, despite the amount of talent that that front five possessed and the mass that we're really, which what you're talking about. That didn't translate frequently to production in the run game. So what I saw Saturday was a lack of efficiency. I mean, you can be, you don't have to be 350 pounds to get on the right guy in the right place and create space. And I think at times that's what we witnessed is there were missed assignments. The some of the combination blocks weren't what they should be to create these seams for the running backs. And that's not to be unexpected when you have a new group and it's the first time that they're seeing some live action. I think it's because you have so many relative new faces across that front five in new places, particularly on that right side, you're going to get some of that. Now, with that said, Ben Cleveland is a familiar name. Trey Hill's been in the action. Jamari Salyer finished up the year, at least in the Sugar Bowl. He's got experience. Same thing with Warren Erickson, and Justin Schaefer is not unfamiliar to real-time action, though it's a year removed. So you got guys that have been in the fire. I think it's just getting everybody on the same page. You don't have to have, I think other teams prove this, you don't have to have 350-pound average across the board for 6'7" in height to have a productive run game. What you need to do is be efficient in what you do. You have to hit your assignment and be sure that everyone's on the same page. There is a number of teams, I think, across the nation that have very productive run games that don't have huge offensive lines, but they work well together. They hit their landmarks. They go to the right place in the right time. They help each other out, and you can create seams that way. It just didn't happen, especially in that first half, with frequency for Georgia.
Let me tell you another concern that I have. I thought Zamir White played, you know, certainly fine on Saturday. I think that he's a very good running back. It's nice to see him healthy and getting a chance to kind of show what he's all about. John, this is, though, under Kirby Smart, been a team that has really leaned on multiple running backs. Less so last year. DeAndre Swift was kind of the guy that got the lion's share of the carries. But, you know, I think that second running back for Georgia's got to emerge. I wanted to see more from James Cook than I saw on Saturday. I'll be happy to admit that I expected more than what we probably got from him. You know, Kenny McIntosh had some real flashes as a special teams guy. Maybe that's a guy that needs a longer look at the running back spot. I know Kendall Milton's been kind of banged up a little bit. I guess McIntosh was a little bit too. You know, Milton got a chance to play, you know, late in this game on Saturday. Maybe he gets an expanded opportunity as the season goes along. But whether it be James Cook, who I expected this to be, or kind of looking at that sort of next crop of, you know, Milton, McIntosh, Edwards, I think you've got to find that second running back to pair along with Zamir White. And I didn't see that second running back on Saturday to the degree that I probably thought that I would.
Well, I'm going to flip it a little bit. I thought James Cook was the feature back on Saturday, and honestly, I think that was an opportunity that kind of showed what his limitations were in the same sense that Zamir White, you know, at times made some great cuts and is a guy that you like watching him run because he runs so hard, but we're spoiled. Georgia fans are spoiled in that we're used to seeing Todd Gurley and then Nick Chubb and Sony Michel and DeAndre Swift. Those are elite backs. And candidly, I'm not sure we have that. I think we have good backs. I think we have a diverse room where there's various traits that each one exhibits and possesses. But I don't think we have the elite running back, at least from what we've seen in that room. So, you know, on Saturday, I think they did a great job of trying to create opportunities for James Cook in space. That's the type of running back he is. You know, if I were to make a comparison, you're looking at those third down backs in the NFL, a poor man's Alvin Kamara. But quite honestly, I haven't seen the shake or the elusiveness that James Cook has shown. I saw more as a freshman than what I've seen in the past couple years. So I think there's still opportunity there, but I think expectations need to be leveled a little bit in that there isn't a DeAndre Swift, Nick Chubb, Sony Michel, or Todd Gurley in that room right now.
It's a John Stinchcomb here as part of the Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. We'll talk about what John liked from the game on Saturday against Arkansas here coming up in a moment. But before that, speaking of what we love is our friends at Marlowe's Tavern and the fact they've got ribs and whiskey going on right now. Now, listen, when I say ribs and whiskey, really, you know, beyond ribs, I don't need to hear anything else. I'm just involved. I love the Marlowe's Tavern ribs during this special event. But on these special menu items, you've also got you know, the smoked salmon. You've got a barbecue sandwich, which they call pigs on the bun. You've got a lot of different menu items. You've got the bourbon bread pudding dessert as a part of this special menu opportunity right now, which I can tell you is absolutely phenomenal. So you've got more than just ribs and whiskey during the ribs and whiskey event. But listen, ribs and whiskey are two pretty important things in my livelihood, in my life. So Marlowe's Tavern, great place to go to for that. If you go to marlowestavern.com, you can see the entirety of the ribs and whiskey special event menu. You can find out about the tavern in your neighborhood. You can either stop by, get some to go, or settle in for some in-person dining there in one of the Marlowe's Tavern dining rooms. They're working hard to take good care of you, keeping the restaurants clean, making sure the food preparation is exactly the way that needs to be in this sort of heightened time of health and safety. Marlowe's Tavern just knocking it out of the park, and you'll know that for yourself when you check out Ribs and Whiskey going on right now at Marlowe's Tavern. And don't miss this. Get that bourbon bread pudding as a dessert. Gonna really like that, John. I know for a fact you love the bourbon bread pudding. We had a good time with that the other day.
Oh, it's one of the best desserts I've had in a restaurant in a long time. So it took me back to my days in New Orleans, where bread pudding and creme brulee were almost staples, and that bread pudding certainly did not disappoint. One of my favorites.
So we talked about the concerns, at least a couple of them. You could probably talk even more about that, but in terms of what you liked, I shared some bright spots that I saw. How about your own bright spots, you know, in terms of either how Georgia, you know, took this game over in the second half or found a way to get a win, even in a day when it played pretty ugly? What were your bright spots here for Georgia on Saturday?
One, I think they made adjustments. I'm going to stick with offensively first. I think they made some adjustments and were willing to do so. They didn't continue to just bang their heads against the wall and force situations. I appreciate the fact that there was improvement in rotation and at a number of positions, and guys were able to find some success, and they were able to do it as a whole. Now, the real bright spot comes on the other side of the ball, because that defense is as it's been sold to us, in that they're elite. And that defensive front, that interior of that defensive line, it's not a sexy position, but just watching the way those guys play and the rotation that we have at the defensive tackle spot, I'm encouraged. I was encouraged to see Jermaine Johnson make an open field tackle, which is probably not, you know, as an outside linebacker, there's expectations there that you're going to have to make those plays. Well, he's more of a pass rusher and a solid tight end side outside linebacker that's more at a point of attack. So to see the diversity in play from some of the outside linebackers on Saturday was very encouraging. You know, watching Richard LeCount get two interceptions, you know, he's one of those guys that's got to be a difference maker for this defense. And he shows up big. Now, it was a little bit inconsistent. I mean, you look at the one touchdown, and it's a receiver that got behind him in coverage. But as a whole, that defensive unit looked really impressive. So I think it's a little bit tempered in that Arkansas is no offensive powerhouse, but impressive performance out of the gates from this defense. There's still a lot of stuff to clean up, but that's what you get in week one. But there's a lot to like about this defense.
Let's talk about DeJuan Mathis here for a moment. It was obviously not a good game for Mathis. I was glad he got to come back in and at least leave maybe with a little better taste in his mouth. You know, John, this is one of those things we tried to warn about last week, that, you know, we had just heard from people we'd seen practices, and, you know, you and I think even talked about this some, that the offense was still very much a work in progress. And while it's a feel-good story that Mathis was getting a chance to start after maybe at one point in time having his football future in doubt, this was still his first game. You know, it's still a huge step up in competition. You have to go play against another opponent in the SEC when you've only been practicing against your own guys. And, you know, I just thought that the excitement about seeing Mathis had the potential of setting up an unfair level of expectation. And we said as much many, many times last week. You know, the game on Saturday, you know, provided some rough moments for him. I think it's important that Georgia fans not now turn 180 degrees the other way and essentially turn on Mathis and act like they never want to see him, you know, again, because his debut didn't go great the way that a lot of SEC quarterbacking debuts kind of don't go great. I'm not going to sugarcoat the performance. It was not good, but it was also his first game ever. And I think that's important to keep in mind. You know, how would you handle DeJuan this week, knowing that in some form or fashion, the athleticism, the arm strength, the ability to run that he brings to the table, Georgia's probably going to need at some point in, during the season. How would you handle him this week if you were Kirby Smart?
Well, like any position, you're comparing what you've got. And, you know, DeJuan's performance, especially that first half, was not great. Let's call it what it is. It was just not great. And a lot of that has to do with his supporting cast. I think it's pretty clear, very rarely will you see a quarterback just miss a throw by 4 yards. So I think that was an indication that he and Burton were most certainly not on the same page as to what route was supposed to be run. I think Kirby has alluded to that a couple of times since, that, you know, you can't put that just on DeJuan. I think that's probably the consensus for most of that first half. Now, the botch snap, that seemed to be a ball that he very easily could have managed. But all in all, you know, it just wasn't a great performance. And the bar is set high across the board for Georgia. You can temper expectations, but at the end of the day, it's a game of production and who gets the job done. And I think when you look at these players, DeJuan's a guy who has a really high ceiling. And that was a rough first half, no doubt about it. Start to season, it wasn't very productive. And I think when you put that in contrast to what Stetson did, which was come in and he kind of created at times and was decisive with the football, it probably makes it look a little worse, not to mention the fact that that was a coach's decision to make that switch. So at that given time, that they are expressing not only to the fans but to the team, we feel like Stetson probably gives us a better opportunity to create momentum and get some offensive production with him under center than DeJuan. So this is a very important week, I think, to manage and encourage a young player who was given an opportunity and it didn't go the way anyone wanted it to. Not DeJuan, not the coaching staff, not the fan base. But I certainly think that it's way too early to give up on DeJuan, big picture-wise. If I was to assess him, and I don't even know if that's fair, considering my abilities as a quarterback and experience there at that position. But my biggest concern wasn't about the fumble, wasn't about the interception. I think it was more about just the decisiveness in the pocket. And it was a little bit passive at times. And in the SEC, I don't think you have that luxury. I think you make good decisions quickly and you live with them. In contrast, Stetson was able to make some quick decisions. He was decisive with the football, which is probably due to his experience. And, you know, he's gone to JUCO, and that's the type of player he is. Now, with that said, the one ball he's throwing a fade down the line to George Pickens, which, you know, is, you can't really question a guy to try to get Pickens an opportunity, but it wasn't a well-placed ball, and it was dangerous. So it's against a different cornerback, that very easily could be an interception, and you're talking about Ali, you know, he's careless with the ball. So there's that balance you have to make between being decisive and the basement of that concept is being reckless. So for DeJuan, it's important this week that he gets in those reps and gets that opportunity. I'll be very interested to see what the game plan is going into Saturday against Auburn.
Well, John, it's great to have you here as part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. There's so much more that we could talk about, but our time is gone for now. So we will get ready to watch the Dogs in Auburn here this upcoming week. Big step up in competition for UGA, and we'll enjoy the chance to talk to you about it very soon here on our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update as well.
B.A., we're getting to talk about real football.
It feels good. It feels good to be doing it, doesn't it? Even after a little bit of a shaky game, at least it was a game, and at least Georgia found a way to win. So from that standpoint, I am on top of the world today.
Yeah, no doubt. A shaky 27-point win is a good one for me. So now I look forward to actually watching real football back in Sanford Stadium.
Looking forward to that
as well.
Looking forward to that as well, John. We'll talk to you soon.
All right, go Dogs.
let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Fruit.
Yeah, so great stuff from John Stinchcomb there. And I think his words on Dwan Mathis are absolutely appropriate. You know, Mathis, when he plays, needs to be better than he was on Saturday. But right now, you know, listen, y'all, you know, Georgia got put into a tough spot when Jamie Newman left this team. I mean, everybody wants to make it out to be this thing of, well, Newman saw the writing on the wall because this guy had passed him up, and then also this guy had passed him up, and maybe that guy had passed him up too. But the honest truth is that late in the season, losing someone that had been anticipated to be the starter, you know, put Georgia in a little bit of a tough spot. And you can decide who you want to blame for that, but it just kind of is true. And right now, JT Daniels is not healthy. Maybe he's healthy enough to play on Saturday. But even if he comes into place, here's the thing we got to be careful about. Is to turn this into, well, you know, Jamie Newman was going to be the offensive savior. Well, now it's Dwan Mathis who's going to be the offensive savior. Well, now it's Stetson Bennett who's going to be the offensive savior. Well, now it's JT Daniels who's going to be the offensive savior. I think there's a tendency to put too much pressure on all of these guys. You know, this for Georgia is not an offensive fix that's going to happen overnight. And it's not going to be led by one player. Coaching matters on this. I thought the good news for Saturday when Bennett came in, and we're going to hear from Bennett in a moment, especially when he got more comfortable, you know, it becomes one of these things of game managing, not as a backhanded compliment, but just simply managing the game that's in front of you. And for Georgia, that means also just kind of finding a way to get to guys, you know, making some throws. Jermaine Burton with a nice catch, you know, touchdown, you know, for George Pickens, just kind of finding a way to get the weapons involved. I thought that Bennett did some of that on Saturday. All right, we're going to move on here, get ready to do our SEC through. Before that, I know Saturday, I told you it was a weird day inside Reynolds Razorback Stadium. It was also a weird day for many of you who, in a normal circumstance, might be in Fayetteville with me, or in a normal circumstance, might be in Athens this upcoming Saturday, but maybe you find yourself not. There's no problem with that, though, because many of you making the best of it at home, tailgating has turned into homegating, and you can find out about how you and your other Georgia fan friends are kind of experiencing homegating this year with our Homegating 101 page there. It's brought to you by our friends at Kroger, Classic City Lager, R.S. Andrews, and Marlowe's. If you go to the top of the page, dognation.com, there's a link to Homegating 101 right there, and you can kind of see how other Georgia fans are having their home gating experience set up. So you can check that out. Go to dognation.com for more. Also, once again, big thanks to Kroger, Classic City Lager, R.S. Andrews, and Marlowe's for more on that. And by the way, speaking of our friends at Kroger, it was fun over the weekend to be able to pass out some of those really cool Kroger Dog Nation masks that they've made. I'll tell you more about those coming up. That was a fun thing to be able to do. All right, let's do SEC through here. And there's enough SEC stories. It's going to be probably Wednesday before we fully turn the page on the first weekend. I don't have time to do everything that happened in the SEC this weekend, but I do want to deal with two things in particular. First of all, Auburn's game against Kentucky. And once again, not overreacting, not making more of this, because there are going to be some people, and you can see this on, you can go to our forum, probably forum.dognation.com, see this already. Oh, you know, Auburn's going to, you know, kill Georgia. Auburn's going to beat up on Georgia. The truth is that the Georgia-Auburn game is exactly the way that we kind of always said that it was. Auburn was an underrated team, I believe, the entirety of the offseason. They get a win against Kentucky on Saturday, kind of pulling away there over the course of the second half. You know, Georgia feels like it's got some things to work on after week one. Auburn does the same way. Auburn didn't run the ball, I would say, great on Saturday against Kentucky. Bo Nix, pretty good day. The one thing about Auburn that's a little bit different this year, and we'll see how much Chad Moore is able to utilize this. But there's a difference in Auburn this year than what we've kind of normally seen in the Gus Malzahn era. Auburn's better at receiver than they've been. Now, we said this, and I think it's turning out to be true. Seth Williams has a nice game. He's a good receiver. Eli Stove is kind of a veteran presence. Anthony Schwartz is arguably one of the fastest players in the SEC. Auburn's better at receiver than they have been for most of the Gus Malzahn era, and I think you do see that show up a little bit against Kentucky on Saturday. This is a tough game. You know, if you want to go back to the summer, you know, Georgia's about a 7.5-point favorite. I guess they briefly opened as a 4.5-point favorite on Saturday. Line kind of moved at some of the, you know, well-known betting houses to about 6.5. I could see some movement back in the direction of Auburn here this week, just because there's going to be so much media chatter on what Georgia didn't do. The fact that people saw Auburn get a win over a ranked opponent. Obviously, game day is in the house on Saturday. A little bit different kind of experience for that, because you won't have, you know, fans gathering around Myers Quad. I think game day is actually going to be inside Sanford Stadium for that. So, you know, it's a huge game. We knew it would be. It feels every bit as big as we kind of thought it would. It's a major challenge for Georgia, and it's a week's worth of time to get ready, finding out what you're doing at quarterback. I would not discount, though, what John Stinchcomb and I just talked about. Part of the search for Georgia here, too, is not just figuring out a quarterback. I think that Georgia needs to be better with its running game than it was last Saturday. This is not a team, to oversimplify it for a moment, this is not a team this year, I believe, that's going to use the run to set up the pass. When the passing game is stifled, and in the first half on Saturday it clearly was, it's going to be harder for the running game this year because it's not a proven commodity like DeAndre Swift. Maybe, you know, guys like Zamir White or some of the other names in the running back room eventually become that, but they're not thought to be that way right now. And in addition to that, this is just a little bit different kind of offensive line this year. The absence of first-round picks at both your tackle positions. Solomon Kinley, who's now starting in the NFL. These guys are slimmer now than they were a year ago, which is probably a good choice, but it still presents some challenges. So part of the search here to be at your best against Auburn, I think, for Georgia also includes finding a way to get a little bit more into that running game. Let me do one more thing here really quick as a part of our SEC through, and then we were going to get to Stetson Bennett here, who I thought had some interesting things to say after his performance on Saturday. So I got a bunch of Twitter stuff, a decent amount, about all the things I had said about Mike Leach over the course of the offseason and my belief that Leach is going to be a failed SEC coach after the upset win for the Bulldogs against LSU. And to keep with the theme of the show, once again, we're not going to overreact to one game, one performance, although it was a very impressive one for Leach in his coaching debut, and KJ Costello, the Stanford transfer over to Mississippi State at quarterback, big, huge numbers he's able to put up in this one. I'm going to give a ton of credit to Costello, who we knew was a good quarterback, and we expected to have a really good year, and I'll give a ton of Leach credit for winning his SEC debut. That's something not every coach is able to do. Mike Leach was able to get that done. But let's keep this in perspective here for a moment. Was Mike Leach a game-changing coach at Texas Tech? No, he was good. He was in the top 25 every now and then, made a decent bowl every now and then, had some good players, certainly put up some big numbers, but it's not like Mike Leach, you know, conquered the Big 12 while coaching at Texas Tech. You go to Washington State. Was Leach a game-changing coach there in Pullman? No, he was good at Wazoo, put up a bunch of, yards and points. Gardner Minshew set records for him. He has some, kind of nice moments, but he very rarely beat Washington, his in-state rival there. Not taking over the world while at the Pac-12. So here's a coach that dazzling statistical performances, but didn't take over the Big 12. Dazzling statistical performances at Washington, but didn't take over the Pac-12. All of a sudden, we're going to believe he's going to take over the SEC West because he beat LSU on Saturday with LSU, who's had a gazillion defections off the team and didn't have Derek Stingley, their best player, on Saturday. That's the kind of thing I'm going to say calm down on. I think what happened on Saturday between Mississippi State and LSU was not so much a referendum on how good the Bulldogs are going to be, but how problematic things are in Baton Rouge right now. Now, ultimately, I still think that LSU bounces back, plays better a lot this season, and admittedly, I expected LSU to win this game comfortably on Saturday. So from that standpoint, I don't mind telling you that I was wrong. But wrong in such a way that it causes me to recalibrate my opinion and rethink all of this? No, not at all. Nice debut for Mike Leach in Mississippi State. Scary time if you're in Baton Rouge. I wonder what the list of, since 2003, when LSU won the national championship and kind of that long string of SEC national champions started happening, I wonder how many of those SEC national champions lost their conference opener the following year. My guess is it's not very many. So if you're LSU, that's maybe a little bit of a concern in terms of your bounce back, as a reigning national champion. But no doubt a very interesting result there in the SEC will make that your SEC through. All right, let me do something kind of quickly here just for a moment. Stetson Bennett on Saturday, we mentioned this, that, Bennett certainly got really, really comfortable in the second half, started delivering the football, 69% completion percentage on the day, 211 yards passing, couple touchdowns in the second half, started getting very, very comfortable with himself. And after the game, he even said that, boy, once he had a chance to get in, take a breath, it seems like he started feeling pretty good after that. This is what Bennett had to say.
Definitely coming in the second half was easier than coming in straight off, just feeling more comfortable with the guys and going in there and knowing what we were about to do. But after that two-minute drill, that really boosted the confidence before the half.
So Bennett is, I think, a competent young man. I had a chance to speak to him a couple of springs ago, and he just kind of comes across as a very cool customer, a guy that's not kind of overwhelmed really by anything that goes on. And when Bennett spoke to reporters on Saturday, there was one moment in particular that kind of stood out to me. And you've seen this a lot from players over the course of years where, you know, when they're asked a question, they just immediately pivot back to, hey, we want to take it one game at a time. We just got to do what's best. You know, hey, I'm just out there to support my teammates. You know, players are kind of coached to say very little, and sometimes they are a little bit concerned about revealing too much about themselves. But on Saturday, Bennett was asked, how did you feel about all the quarterbacks that Georgia brought in? How did you feel about at least the perception that a way it could have been perceived that Georgia was simply recruiting over you and you were never going to get your chance? There are a lot of quarterbacks that wouldn't have had enough self-confidence to answer this question honestly and authentically. But Stetson Bennett took it head on about how he felt about all the quarterbacks that had been brought in behind him at Georgia. And playing confidently on the field sometimes is connected closely to speaking confidently off the field. This was a very, very interesting moment for Stetson Bennett after the game on Saturday. Take a listen to this.
Yeah, it was tough. But, I mean, at the end of the day, there's a lot of people in the world and a lot of voices, a lot of people talking, a lot of people who don't know a lot of stuff talking. And, I mean, really the only people you can listen to are those close to you and yourself and just work every day. And
you weren't demoralized or anything at any point?
Yeah, at some point. I mean, a little bit. But, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, Coach Smart's bringing everybody in here to compete. And, I mean, he's trying to win a national championship. And, I mean, those guys coming in here, I mean, give us the best chance to win a national championship, then, you know, that's what we're going to do. You just got to compete every day with those guys. So.
I really like that from Stetson Bennett. I think that's really interesting. There are a lot of quarterbacks, a lot of players, who were asked directly in the post-game press conference, were you demoralized by the players that Georgia brought in behind you? A lot of them would say, no. Yeah, I'm one game at a time. You know, I'm just out here to support my teammates. Stetson Bennett says, yeah, I was a little demoralized by that, but I'm going to just keep working hard and try to go out there and, you know, have my chance to play well when my number is called. And that's exactly what he did. I have no idea how this quarterback situation is going to work out for Georgia. I really don't. Obviously, as a fan, I hope by the end of the year they have a good quarterback who settles in as the starter. But when you think about the way in which that Bennett contributes right now, that level of confidence, that sort of assuredness that he kind of speaks with right there, I do think that helps him on the field. I think we saw that with our own eyes on Saturday, and then we heard it with our ears after the game was done. So I got to admit one thing, and if you're watching a video, you can kind of see this there. I didn't like the uniforms as much during the game on Saturday. Now, maybe that's because Georgia was not playing well in them for at least half this game. The white stripe on the pants is just way too wide. And I think on the video, when I, you know, first saw the uniforms revealed, I was just kind of excited about the whole throwback vibe of it. But the truth is, seeing them in person, they don't come across quite as throwbacky to me. That white stripe is just too wide. They need to more closely resemble the stripe features on the silver breeches. So I gotta say, I didn't like the uniforms as much on Saturday once the game actually kind of got going. But if they want to wear them again, that's probably fine all the way around. Gator hater updater. I guess there was a little bit of a Gator hater updater mess up on Friday's show. So let's make sure we do it correctly today. 1,430 days. Thanks for being here, Dog Nation Daily, presented by Pella Window and Door of Georgia.